Daf Yud Tes Hamad Aleph, and we're up to the sugya in the middle of the Amud about Mafligim B'Sfina, Ein Mafligim B'Sfina. But let's just review the last sugya that we did about sending an Igeres B'Yad Nochri on Erev Shabbos. We had a Braisa. The Braisa had a Reisha and a Seifa to it. The Reisha prohibits sending an Igeres b'yad nochri b'erev Shabbos, elim kein kotzeitz lo domin, unless he's hired to do so. So if the Meshaleach, the Jew, has a contractual agreement with the nochri, and he's going to pay him kach v'kach, a certain schar for his shlichus, then he's allowed to send an Igeres on Erev Shabbos. Because now the goy does not appear to be working as a shliach on behalf of the Yisrael, but rather he's doing it for the schar. That's what motivates him, and that's why he's being paid. Now, keep in mind that we already mentioned that Beit Shammai has more of a chumra here, and he says that ketzitzas domim is not significant enough to remove this problem. And it's like the case of someone who sells or lends objects to a goy, or sends a gift to a goy in Erev Shabbos right before Shkias Achama. And Beis Shammai, back on Daf Yud Chesamid Beis, prohibited it. But let's go according to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel prohibits sending an Igeres with a goy without Ktzitzas Domin. And the Sefer the Braisa presents a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beit Shammai omrim kedeshi agil beiso. Beis Hillel omrim kedeshi agil bayis harishon hasomach lechomash al irshinsh taleach l'sham. So the Sefer the Braisa presenting this machlokas would seem to have all sorts of requirements, and if those conditions are not met, it's also to send this Igeres b'yad nochri of Shabbos, even though the Reisha the Braisa told us that if there was ktzitzas domim, if he already made a salary of, they agreed on a certain amount of money, then since the guy is being paid for his services, then he's not considered a shliach of the Israel. So the Gemara tries to clarify and reconcile the Reisha and the Sefer, because the Gemara thinks that in the Sefer it's asur to send an Igeres unless, again, certain conditions are met, despite the fact that there was Ktzitzas Domin. And the Gemara asks the question, Valo Katzas, why is the Sefer being machmir, making all these conditions in order to permit sending the letter when it was a case of Ktzitzas Domin? And Rav Sheshis is going to add a few words to the Braisa to wedge between the Reisha and the Sefer. Hachikama. Here's what you have to do to read the Reisha and make it an integral whole so that it makes sense. He says, if there was Ktzitzas Domim, then you're allowed to send a letter with a Nochri according to Beis Hillel on Erev Shabbos in any event. And that's because the Shliach, Nochri is not operating on your behalf, but on his own behalf. Now we get to the Sefer. The Sefer is talking about Imlo Katzatz. Those are the three words that we have to add. And under those conditions, we have to worry about the fact that it looks like the Goy is operating as a Shliach on behalf of the Israel. And here we have Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. What are the conditions that have to be met in order to permit sending the letter in the hands of the Goy on Erev Shabbos in a case of low katzatz? And Beit Shammai requires that it has to be early enough on Erev Shabbos to give enough time before Shabbos enters for this guy to reach the house of the person to whom the letter of the Igeres is being sent. And Beis Hillel say, no, it's enough that the guy has enough time before Shabbos to reach the first house that's in the entrance to the city, Samach Lechoma. But the Gemara is not happy with this either, because let's go back and read the Reisha. how are we going to interpret the Seifa of this Braisa that even in the absence of Ktzitzas Damim, you have a heter to send this letter with the guy on Erev Shabbos if certain conditions are met, if it's early enough, etc. Vamar Reisha, but the Reisha says, Ein Mishalchen. The Reisha seems to assume that unless you have Ktzitzas Damim, in a very absolute way, you cannot send this letter with a guy. And now you're telling me, no, even in the absence of Ktzitzas Damim, the way Rav Sheshes adds these words in Lo Katzatz, you're still permitted to send the letter if, etc. So the Gemara says, Lo Kasha, that there's no stira between the Reisha and the Seifa. What we're going to have to do here is, we're going to have to add another condition into the equation. When the Seifa allows you to send the Geres Biad Nochri, even without Ktzitzas Damim, if the guy could get there Mibojom, that's only a case where the person to whom he's sending the letter, the recipient of the letter, is Kavua B'Osa'ir. That's where he is always. Because if that's not where he is always, then we're always afraid, even if there's enough time, according to the clock, for the Nachri to fulfill his commission and bring the letter to the person who has to receive the letter, but he might not find that person if the person is not Kavua B'Osa'ir. But the Reish is talking about a case where you're sending a letter in the hands of a Nachri on Erev Shabbos, there was no Ktzitzas Damim, and the person to whom you're sending the letter is not Kavua Be'ir. So we have an additional fear that he may not find that person. So let's summarize now the rules that are set forth in this braisa based on this sugya. And by the way, when the Gemara mentions the leader, the ruler, you know, you have to, it was very common in those days to send a letter to the ruler for whatever reason to try to get clemency. And that's just one example, but it's just divra kosa behova. The ruler here, the shalit, as we call it, davar v'mosa, that person is just indicative, representative of the class of people to whom you are sending the letter. So now we're going to give an overview of this Gemara. A person is allowed to send a letter biad nochri on Erev Shabbos to a person who lives in another city if that recipient is dar ba'ir b'kvius, if he lives in that city on a permanent basis. He's not just there on a temporary basis. And we have to add another condition. There's enough time for the shliach to reach that house of that person who's kavua be'ir before Shabbos. Under those conditions, it's permissible to send this letter biad nochri even if there was no salary, there was no contractual agreement on how much he would pay. It's lo katzas lo domin. Why? Because the nochri could fulfill his shlichus before Shabbos. You have nothing to worry about. You sent the letter early enough that the guy could reach his destination to give the letter to the recipient in that city, and that recipient is kavua be'ir. But now let's talk about the following situation. Let's say that the recipient of the letter is not kavua in that city, and we have to worry about the fact that maybe the shliach won't find him, and just giving enough time for him to get to that city is not sufficient because he may have to run around looking for that person. He may even have to go to another city, and that's going to happen on Shabbos, which is a problem because he looks like a shliach for the Yisrael. Therefore, you're not allowed to send a letter in the hands of a guy on Erev Shabbos, even if there's enough time for him to reach the house of the person, the recipient, because the recipient is not kavur the ear, unless he was kotzeitz scharo. If there was an agreement that he would pay such and such an amount of money for the service of the guy to deliver the letter, then he would be allowed to send the letter, again according to the Shita Beis Hillel. This despite the fact that the person to whom he's sending the letter, the recipient, is not kavua be'ir. In the case of Katzas Lo Domim, Liesh La'ayin, we have to figure out would there be any restrictions? Would there be, or just as it a carte blanche heter? What about the condition that the shliach, the goy, could reach the city and deliver that letter before Shabbos? Is that requirement, that shehus of zman, a requirement? If you take a look in the Tosi Shonim, you get the impression that in a case of lo kotzatz, then the heter would only be if the letter could be received and the within that time period before Shabbos, and the person who's receiving the letter is kavua. You get the impression from the Tosi Shonim that in the case of kotzatz lo donim, you have a carte blanche absolute heter to send this letter, even if lo yikabel ha'igeres kodem Shabbos, even though the recipient will not receive the letter before Shabbos. You get the same impression from the Ritva. The Ritva says that ein meshalchen igeres b'yad nochiber of Shabbos, but if kotzatz ha'mshaleach eschar ha'nochir yesh lahatir gam b'erev Shabbos im lo kotzatz, then all these conditions apply. Im kvua b'diras u'shel diras u'shel makabel igeres b'osair, and exactly how much time it would take to him to get it. However, the Rosh seems to indicate that even in the case of kotzatz lo domim, you still need those conditions. And the language of the Rosh is, and this is based on a brisa back on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, be ofer she kotzatz hamshaleach eschar shel hanochri, afal pikein asurihi lishloch biyodaber of Shabbos, unless he can get there before Shabbos. At least that condition still exists. So Ayin Barosh. Another point that we want to make here is that if the Israel who sent the Nochri tells him that, look, if he doesn't find the Makabel, if he doesn't find the recipient in that city, don't go to another city. Then if that was the nature of the agreement, then that's considered as if he was kavur b'dirasa b'ir, and you'd be allowed to send the letter on Erev Shabbos. Now, from the fact that the Gemara, in this answer of Rav Sheshes, the way the Gemara develops it, the Igeris was sent to a certain person, and again, even though the Gemara mentions, as I said before, the Sholit Ha'ir, it's Lav Dafka Sholit Ha'ir, it's just a Dugma B'Alma, because Regilim Hayu Anoshim L'Shloch Igeris L'Shiltonos, back in that time it was quite common to send it to the Baritz, you know, to the head honcho over there. But anyone who receives that letter and he's Dar B'Kvias L'Ir, that's absolutely the same. Now, if we had time, we would take a look at Rabbeinu Hananel and the Rif, who they think that the word doar here, right, or davor, we should pronounce it the right way, davor, is not referring to the sholet ha'ir, but rather to the base davor, which is similar to what we have. And that's where they used to send all the letters, like to the kind of the post. They were in charge of sending and receiving the letters, sorting them out for those who lived in that city. And the Gemara has in mind here that if there's a davar kavur ba'osair who's in charge of receiving and organizing the letters, categorizing them and bringing them, making sure that every person gets it, then you're allowed to send a letter biyad ha'nochri if there's enough time for the letter to be received in the base hadavor before Shabbos, and that would apply even if lo kotzas schara. So just to summarize the dinim that we had in this past sugya, so we can start the new sugya today, we have a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai regarding the question of whether a person is allowed to send a letter b'yad nochri on Erev Shabbos in Kotzatz Eschoro. According to Beit Shammai, he's allowed to do so. And we said, according to many Rishonim, it means even though there's not enough time for the Shliach, for the Goy, to bring the letter to that city before Shabbos, because once it was Kotzatz Eschoro, then the Goy is not operating here on behalf of Israel, but rather for himself. According to Beit Shammai, ketzitza is not a mitigating factor, and it still becomes prohibited. And if there was no ketzitza scharo, then the shliach, if he cannot reach that city before Shabbos, everybody agrees that it's osur. The case of lo kotas is domo. However, in a situation, a scenario where he could reach there, then Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel have the argument, does he have to reach the house of the person who's receiving the letter, or is it enough, it's sufficient that he reaches the first house, Samach Lechoma, that's Beit Hillel. And that's a case where that person to whom he's sending the letter is Dar B'Kviyas Ba'Osa'ir. If he's not Dar B'Kviyas Ba'Osa'ir, you're not allowed to send the letter to that person Biad Nochri, because we're always afraid that the Nochri won't find him in that city and he'll have to go to a different city and he won't be able to receive the letter, to bring the letter there before Shabbos. Tana Rabbanan, well, up to the Braisa, Ein Mafligim B'Sfina Pachos Mishloshi Yomim Kodim HaShabbos, Kodim L'Shabbos. Now first let's talk about the word Hafloga. Rashi gives two interpretations. The first one is it's Lashon Hafrosha, Sheporesh Min HaYabosh L'Yam. So he sets sail, embarking from the dry continent out to the ocean. And the second interpretation is that there's a word probably from the Pilgus. I'm not sure exactly if it's some sort of a Mideastern word, and that Pilgus means the middle of the city of the sea. So that's why this trip is called Hafloga. He's really going out there to the middle of the sea, and he's only allowed to leave if it's more than 3 days before Shabbos. So, for example, from Wednesday and on, it becomes also a Haflik. Because you have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You only have 3 days before Shabbos. If you leave, however, on a Tuesday, that's mutter. And this halach is codified in the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim Simon Reish Mem Ches. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Magen Avraham that from Wednesday and on, it's already osur. However, the Gaon Mivilna quotes other Rishonim that you include Shabbos in the 3 days, and therefore you'd be allowed to leave on a Wednesday. Now, what exactly is the reason for this Isur of not leaving, embarking on a ship within 3 days of Shabbos? Rabbi Nachmanal is of the opinion that the reason for this is because of the Isur Tchumen, because Hafloga B'Sfina means that he's going to be at least much more than 2,000 amah away from the place where he started his Shabbos. But this only applies in a case where the boat is less than Asar Tfachim. If the boat is above Asar Tfachim, then there's no din tchumim in a place that's above Asar Tvachim in a karka. And therefore, in a case of Lahaflig Liyam HaGadol, where the ship is above Asar Tvachim, then it should be mutter. The Rif, on the other hand, although he brings the interpretation of Rabbeinu Chananel, he has a whole bunch of kashes on Rabbeinu Chananel, but his pirush, his understanding is that the reason underlying the Isra Afloga is because of Bigdol Mitzvah's Onig Shabbos, that during this 3 day period, the first 3 days of his traveling on this ocean liner, then it's not a very good feeling. You know, the ship moves back and forth. His body is not used to all that movement. He gets seasickness, and he will not be mekayim the mitzvah of Onig Shabbos. But after 3 days on the ship, somehow he gets menuchas hadas. His body is back to shape. He's used to the ocean, and he can eat. He can fulfill the mitzvah of Onig Shabbos. Now the Braisa goes on to say, "Bamedvar murim l'dvar rishus, aval l'dvar mitzvah shapir domi." If he's going out for a mitzvah, he's allowed to leave even on erev Shabbos. And that means that even though he's going to have a certain element of discomfiture and seasickness, but nevertheless, he's osik b'mitzvah, and if he's potter from the mitzvah of onig Shabbos. That's all according to the Rif. Now we have the Baal HaMoreh Shita. He understands that the reason for the Isur Afloga is because of Sakana, that there is always a certain element of danger, of jeopardy involved in traveling by ship. And therefore it might lead to a situation where they'll have to be Mechal Shabbos because of Pikuach Nefesh. And these 3 days before Shabbos are considered part of that Shabbos. You've left last week's Shabbos behind, you're now projecting forward to this week's Shabbos, and he already has at that point, once he gets to 3 days before Shabbos, an obligation to be careful that he shouldn't come to a situation where he has to be Mechal Shabbos, even though he'll be Mechal Shabbos for the right reasons for Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore he should not embark within that period of time before Shabbos. He has to be worried and concerned about the possibility of Sakana and Chil Shabbos. Tosfos, Divar Maskil Ein, has another Shita. He understands that the Isur Loshut B'Sfina B'Shabbos and K'shem Sha'asul Adam Loshut B'Mayim Gufo, just like we're not allowed to swim on Shabbos in the water, and that's a gzeira because Shem Yaseh Chovesh Shel Shitin, he may create some sort of a kli on Shabbos to help him swim, to go through the water. So too, included in that gzeira, in that prohibition, is traveling through the water by boat. The Rashbam, on the other hand, has a different shita. He holds that this sugya that we're learning reflects the shita Beit Shammai, which we learned back on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, that a person is not allowed to begin on Erev Shabbos a melacha unless he knows he's guaranteed that he can complete it before Shabbos. Therefore, haflogah b'sfina before Shabbos is prohibited because he's going to continue with his haflogah on Shabbos. However, according to Beis Hillel, says the Rashbam, it will be mutter lahaflig b'sfina on Erev Shabbos because the sfina goes by itself. The nosim, those who are traveling on the boat, did not violate any sort of isur, and it would be mutter. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that if he's maflig b'sfina, the nesiyah b'sfina, the travel itself is not prohibited, but we're talking about a sfina where most of the passengers are Jewish, and we have reason to believe that the sailors themselves, who will have to do certain malachas, many malachas, during the course of this trip. So therefore, it's as if the goyim who are operating the ship, and they are sailors and so forth, they are doing shlichus of the Israel. However, if most of the people on the boat are non-Jewish, then they're not operating for the Israel, they're operating on behalf of the goyim. Those are the people who commissioned them, and therefore be mutal haflig even on Erev Shabbos. Now let's go on in the Braisa, continuing the Braisa, posek imo al menas lishbos. The Israel has to make a condition with the owner of the boat or owner of the cruise company that he's traveling with, al menas lishbos, that they, when the Sfina, when we get to the point of Shabbos, the Sfina should stop, terminate its shriveling. And if at the end of the day Eino Shoves, then that's not a problem. And that's Divrei Rebbe. So according to Rebbe, another condition that has to be met, and we're assuming right now that condition has to be met even in a case of Lidvar Mitzvah. We'll get back to that in just a minute. Says Rebbe, he has to explicitly mention a condition with the owner of the ship that when they get to Shabbos, then they're going to take a break. They'll dock the ship for Shabbos. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Einu tzarech, there's no such condition, and there's no need for the Israel to set up a tanai with Bala Svina, the Goy, that the Svina should be shoveis on Shabbos. Now, the Rishonim say that the reason why Rebbe wants this tanai, and he demands it as a requirement, is because Kedei Shlo Yiresh Aldas Lelech B'Shabbos Nichnas L'Shon, as if to say he embarked on this ship knowing full well that he would travel on Shabbos. So he has to be posik him in Nochri. And the question now that we raised is, are we talking about a case of Dvar Rishus or a Dvar Mitzvah? Now, according to the Piskei HaRid, we're talking about this posek imanochri of Rebbe, that requirement, in the case of Yotze L'Dvar Rishus. But you'll ask me if he's Yotze L'Dvar Rishus, he's not allowed to get on the boat in any event, but we're talking about before 3 days. So let's take a simple case. On Tuesday, he gets on the ship, he knows the ship is going to be traveling on Shabbos, he's not allowed to do so. He cannot embark on that ship, according to Rebbe, says the Piskei HaRid, unless he makes the condition that the ship will dock for Shabbos. However, the Bach, again back in Simon Reish Mem Ches, looks at the Rambam and the Tur, and he comes to the conclusion that this din of Rebbe is talking about a case where he's Yotze L'Dvar Mitzvah on Erev Shabbos. If he was mafling 3 days before Shabbos, he embarked on a Tuesday, he doesn't need to be posik, even according to Rebbe. And it's possible that in a case where the Nochri tells them up front that he's not going to comply with this condition, and he's going to continue his traveling on Shabbos, it would still be mutter, because all we need is a gili das, that the Yisrael reveals his intention of not traveling on the ship on Shabbos. Now we paskin la halacha like Rav Shimon Gamliel, and that's based on a principle that we have in the Gemara in Pesach Mechav Zayin halacha kirevi michavero. That's dafka shenechlach im chavero, but velok shenechlach im aviv. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is the father of Rebbe. However, there are poskim, Rabbeinu Hananel and the Rambam, Hilchos Shabbos Perek Lamed, that paskin like Rebbe, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Simon Reish Mem Ches. Now, one last piece in the Sefer of this Braisa, and again we're talking about a person who's Maflik Bisfina. He's leaving the city. And the Braisa says, Umin sar litzidon afilu b'erev Shabbos mutar. Meaning, if he's leaving even on a Friday from Tsar to Tzidon, two cities up in the north, that are both, they both are on the seashore, and it's a very short trip, and there's every reason to assume that he'll arrive at his destination of Tzidon before Shabbos, then it's mutter to be maflik b'sfin on Erev Shabbos. Now, let's just point out, based on a Gemara Pesachim, that the Yom HaShuk, the market day in the city of Tzidon, was an Erev Shabbos. So it was very common for Jews to want to leave Tzur and travel to Tzidon by boat on Erev Shabbos. Now, the reason why we have reason to believe that the ship will reach Tzidon before Shabbos has to do with another factor as well. And that's called a Ruach Tova. There's a wind that is blowing in the right direction that'll help push this ship from Tzar to Tzidon within a day. And therefore you're allowed to leave. Now, obviously, you want to check out the conditions and the wind factor. Now, the Beis Yosef points out that we're talking about a case where he's leaving very early in the morning. If he's going to go in a later time during the day, there's no possibility that he'll reach his destination in Sido before Shabbos, and then he's not allowed to go on this trip. Tana Rabbanan. Now we're going to talk about the laws of going out to battle. And we're talking about setting a siege around the city of our enemies. Tana Rabbanan ain't sorin. Sorin is the verb for the noun matzor. Matzor is a siege around the city. Al ayoro shel nochrim. Our military forces will not surround the city of goyim. Pachos mishlosha yomim kodim l'shabbos. Within the period of time of 3 days before Shabbos, they would have to initiate this military campaign on a Tuesday. And we'll see why in just a second. V'mischilu, however, if they already began the process of setting up this matzor, the siege, ein mafsikin, they don't have to terminate the action, the activity that they began. Now this din only applies to a melchemes reshus, that we don't begin a discretionary war within 3 days of Shabbos. It has to be before 3 days. And if they started, they don't have to stop. And in case of melchemes mitzvah, the Yerushalmi points out that you're allowed to go out on this military war even on Shabbos itself. And for example, Yericho, the city of Yericho, at the time Yeshua was conquered on Shabbos, because it was a melchemes mitzvah. However, in the case of melchemes reshus, it's osur. Why? Why is it osur? The Rif Lishitaso, who said in the case of Afloga B'Sfina, it's a problem of bittul mitzvah sonik Shabbos, applies the same logic over here. And in the first 3 days of melchama, there's no time for enjoying food and drink. It's a tirda, it's a pachad, it's the overwhelming fear of battle. After 3 days of battle, there's a certain level of yishuv adas, they can be mekayim the mitzvah of owning Shabbos. The Baal Amor writes that the reason for this isur is because you're placing yourself in sakana, very similar to what we discussed in the case of Afloga B'Sfina in the Baal Amor. And if he's going to have to violate the Shabbos, then during these 3 days close to Shabbos, there's a chiyuv that's chal on a person that he shouldn't put himself into a situation where he might have to be mechal Shabbos. However, if they started the battle, then ein mafsikin, and we're talking about a case where it was within 3 days, and you're not allowed to start this matzor in the city. And even though perhaps their intention was to terminate their activity on Shabbos itself, but was still afraid of the possibility that they'll have to battle on Shabbos and they'll have to be mechal the Shabbos, unless they start a beheter, which is 3 days before Shabbos, then they don't have to be posek even on Shabbos itself. V'chein hoya shamay omer, based on a posuk in Parsha Shoftim, it says uvanisa matzar al ha'ir asher hi osa imcha milchama ad ridita, and that means afilu b'shabbos, which means that you've started this matzar in a city and you're allowed to continue ad ridita even on Shabbos. Why? Because you started the matzor and you're allowed to continue it ad kniyasam, until you subjugate your people, defeat the enemy. Now let's go back to our Mishnah. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Noagim hayu beis Abba, hayu Noagim, Nosnim kli lavan, Lechoves, Nochri, Shlosh Yom Kol Shabbos. The minig was, as testified by Rav Shimon Gamliel, they would give kelim, the begadim that had to be whitened by the launderer, over to the Nochri 3 days before Shabbos. Again, an expression of this idea that within 3 days we're already in the Shabbos mode. We have to think about Shabbos. Tanya, we learned in a brisa. Omar Rav Tzada, Kachaya min Hago Shel Beis Rav Gamliel Shei Noslim Clay, which means Begadim Lavan, white lechoves to a non-Jewish launderer Shloshi Yom Kodem LeShabbos, because the malacha of kibbutz is a very long, drawn-out malacha, and Rabbi Gamliel, in the place of Shimon Gamliel, they were machmir for the Shita Beit Shammai, that we don't give a malacha to a guy unless we assume he can complete that malacha before Shabbos. That's the way Rashi interprets our sugya. Now, there is a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Yudam in Beis that Rabbi Tarfon testified about himself that he was Noe Kibet Shammai, and as a result, that has to do with Kriyat Shema, he put himself into danger. Nistaken, he was in a Sakona situation, and the Gemara castigates Rabbi Tarfon for following the Shita of Beit Shammai against Beis Hillel. So how is it possible that Beis Rav Gamliel were permitted to be machmir themselves like Beit Shammai? So the Vilna Gaon has a slightly different interpretation, according to which he says there are two categories, the two types of debates, of controversies between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. One is in a situation where, or a category in which even Beis Hillel would mode that we should, l'chatchila, if all things are ideal, be machmir like Beit Shammai. Just they don't hold of the obligation to do so. And here, anyone is allowed to be machmer al atzmo kedivrei Beit Shammai. There's a different type of machlokas, a different category where Beis Hillel completely reject Beit Shammai, and then is obligated in an absolute way to observe the minhag of Beis Hillel. So here's a case where even Beis Hillel would allow you to be machmer like Beit Shammai. And therefore you want to be careful that this malacha, which is a very extended malacha, should not take place on Shabbos. Rather, it should be given over to the guy 3 days before Shabbos, guaranteeing that he won't do it on Shabbos. Vitzvuim. However, with regard to colored garments, not the white garments, afilu bi'erev Shabbos, you're allowed to give them to the launderer, because the laundering process in the case of colored clothing is a very short one, and the nachri, the guy, this launderer, could certainly, we assume, complete the process of laundering the beged, this colored beged, before Shabbos. Umidevrem lo madnu shalavonim kashim lechabson yosim in atzvuin. So we understand that white clothing is much more complicated, the laundering process, than colored clothing. Now the Gemara tells us a story about Abaye in this context. Abaye havi yohiv le hahu mona ditzvia. Mona means a beged. He gave a colored beged. Tzvia means savua. Lekatzra. Katzra is the Aramaic parallel to the word koves, which means the launderer. And the word katzra is actually a word in Arabic, as Rashi points out, Beloshen Yishmoel, V'nikroim kach al shem shem katzrim bigdei tzemer. This was their job, to shorten clothing that were made of wool, wooden clothing. And we know today, even when you give a garment to a laundry, you get it back, it's a little bit shorter than it was before. So they're the shorteners. They're called the katzra. Amalei, Abai said to this katzra, to this koves, kama bois ilove, how much do you charge for this service? Amalei, so the launderer turns to Abai and he says, kidchivara, are you talking about a white garment of clothing? Well, in truth, Abai was giving a colored clothing. But nevertheless, this kovetz was charging the price of a white garment, which apparently is a high price. Omeles, Abai says to him, Kvar kodamuch rabanan, which literally translates as hikdimuch achachamim. they already taught us that in the case of a white garment, it's a very much, so much more of a challenging service to launder it. And therefore, why should you charge me the price of a white garment when I'm only giving you a colored garment? The Gemara brings a statement now of Abaye with regard to giving clothing to a launderer. Amar Abaye, Haimain Diyoiv Mana Lakatsra, if a person brings a beged to the launderer, B'mishcha Nesivle, he should measure out the size of the beged before he gives it to him. U'v'mishcha Nishkol Minei, and when he gets it back, he should again measure it. He should check out to see if the launderer did not in any way damage the beged. To eat fe, if it's larger than when he gave it to him, you know, you would think that that's a good thing. Afsede de mischa, he's mafsid the loss. There's going to be a damage to this beged insofar as it was stretched out. The mischa. Mischa is miloshon metach. Lematech means to stretch it out. V'ibotzer. And if on the other hand it comes back to him and it's shorter than when he gave it to him, is afsadeh dekavtzeh. The kovetz caused him a loss by the fact that his garment is it was soaked in boiling hot water and now it got shorter. So you have to be careful, says Abaye. I don't know if Abaye is advocating that you sue the kovetz in these cases, but I guess you'll get the hang of it and see what this kovetz is worth and what he does to your garments. Now the Mishnah says, Shovin elu ve'elu shetoanu, koras beis habad ve'igule hagas. So what you're allowed to do on Erev Shabbos, since the process of dricha has already begun, you're allowed to place these very heavy items on top of the zeisim novim, and the process of dricha of schita will continue on Shabbos. So the Gemara wants to clarify this. Maishna kulhu. Why is it that in all the cases that are listed in the Mishnah on Daf Yud Zayin and Beis, like for example soaking the dio or the samamonim, is Gazu Beir Beit Shammai? Beit Shammai said, we're not going to permit you to start this Malach on Erev Shabbos, in knowing full well that the Shabbos, that during Shabbos the Malach will complete itself naturally on its own. Umayshna Koros Beis Habad Vigule Agas the Lo Gazu. Why is it that in these cases of Koros Beis Habad Vigule Agas, they, Beit Shammai, permitted you to do this? He's starting the Malach before Shabbos, even though it's going to continue on Shabbos. And the Gemara clarifies, Hanoch, these two cases of Beis Habad, Koros Beis Habad, and Igule Agas, is the Iovidle, no, I'm sorry, the other Malachas that are mentioned in the Mishnah, before we get to the Beis Habad. Is the Ovidle B'Shabbos, if he would have done this Malach on Shabbos, M'chayiv Chatos, it's a full-fledged Malach, had he done it B'Shogeg, he would be Chayiv Chatos. Is Gozu Beit Shammai, Beit Shammai made this Gezer and enacted a Harchok that we shouldn't get involved in these Malachs on Erev Shabbos, getting close to Ad Chashechem Chashecha, it's about, Shabbos about to begin. But in the case of Koros Beis Habad and Igule Agas, E Ovidle, even if he were to do this Malach, B'Shabbos, B'Shogeg, Lo Machayiv Kor Machatos, this would not be a complete Malacha of Schita, therefore Lo Gozru. Now let's try to understand why this would not be a Malacha on Shabbos. Now Schita, in the case of Zeisim V'Anovim, is an Av Malacha on Shabbos, as the Gemara is going to say later on, on Kuf Mem Gimel. Nevertheless, that's only if he hasn't begun to crush the olives or the grapes before Shabbos. In a case where he has begun this process, which is our case of Te'inas Koros Beis Habad V'Igulei Agas, you start the process of crushing them before, and this is just the last little bit. So again, if lo riskam ivod yom, he hasn't started crushing the grapes or the olives before Shabbos, then if he would be sochet b'Shabbos, he would be chayev mishum mefarikas hamashke mitocham. He would violate the isur disha, and that would be, he would incur a chiyuv chatos. But here we're talking about a situation where he began the dricha, the risuka, zeisim v'anov before Shabbos, and therefore through teinas hakor, etc., he's not going to violate a chiyuv doraisa of meleches disha with a chiyuv chatos. Therefore, there's no gzera to do this on erev Shabbos. Basically, the theory and the principle that underlies Beit Shammai's ruling is that if the melacha is done on Shabbos, it's as if you did the melacha on Shabbos, even though you set it up on erev Shabbos. That melacha that's done on Shabbos relates to you, but not in a case where even if he had done the melacha on Shabbos, it wouldn't be a melacha. Man tana dechol midi di osi memela shapir dami. Who is the tana that holds that anything that in the future is going to happen by itself, like for example the mashkin, the liquids that have come out through the schita process by themselves, because you set up the korah or the igulei agas before Shabbos, there's no isur Torah for sochet, and therefore Beit Shammai were matir lechatchila to do this. And the Gemara clarifies, Amar Rav Yossi Berebi, Berebi Hanina, Rabbi Yishmael, we're going to learn a Mishnah now in Masechta Edios, in the second chapter, quoting the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael. And this is going to prove to us that there's no Isur Torah of Schita on Shabbos when you set it up in a way that the Malacha will happen by itself, automatically. That's the way Rashi learns this sugya. Tisnan, we learned it in Mishnah in Edios. Hashum, which is garlic, v'haboser, boser are grapes that have not yet matured on the vine. V'hamalilos, these are sheaves of the various grains that have not yet matured. Lo hivshilu called sarkam. And a lot of these are given over to risuk. Risuk means to crush them. And they're going to somehow get some perhaps limited volume of liquids that they'll be able to remove. And he's allowed to do this, says Rabbi Shmuel, on Erev Shabbos, Mivojom. And he's going to allow to put a korah on top of them before Shabbos in order that these mashkim will come out. They'll be mashkim sheyazuvu b'Shabbos. However, Rabbi Shmuel says, Yigmar Mishatefshach, he's allowed to put this korah before Shabbos only if the melacha will be completed. I'm sorry, even if the melacha will be completed, I shouldn't say only, Li'achar HaChashecha, after it gets dark. Rabbi Akiva Omer, here we're turning to Yud Tesamim Beis, Lo Yigmar. He's not allowed to place the Korah Mibodyom on top of these unripened grapes such a way that his mindset, his assumption is that the Malach will be completed after nightfall. So we can learn from Rabbi Shmuel that if a person squeezes on Shabbos Shum or Boser or Malilos, these various cases that we mentioned earlier that were crushed on Erev Shabbos, he's not going to be chayav achatos, and therefore he's allowing l'chatchila that you could set up the korah b'hatin aleim sakorim b'bojom before Shabbos. And that's the sheet of Beit Shammai in our Mishnah. The Gemara now quotes a different opinion as to who is the author of our Mishnah, and this opinion is going to maintain that kol davar asid lisochet me'atzmo ein bo isur sfita min hatorah b'Shabbos. We have another tana. No, we're offering another alternative. It's not that we're disagreeing with Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. And this is based on a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbos. Omar, he says, Omar Rabbi Elazar, and Desnan. We have, no, it's interesting. There are two Rav Elazars here. One is Rav Elazar ben Pedas. He's the one who's telling us that our Mishnah here reflects the Shita of Rav Elazar ben Shammua, whose Shita is codified in the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Gimel. Chalos Dvash, Sheriskam V'Erev Shabbos V'Yotzu Me'atzman Asur, that's the Tanakhama, V'Rav Elazar Matir. So we have what's called Chalos Dvash, and these are honeycombs that he crushes on Erev Shabbos, and by the process of nature, so to speak, Yotzume Atzman, the Dvash, the honey, will come out on Shabbos Me'elov. And the Tanakhama Shita is that's awesome. You're not allowed to eat that Dvash on Shabbos because we're afraid that he may come to do the Schita B'Yadayim B'Shabbos, which would be a violation of an Issur Torah. And Rabbi Lazar is matir. He says to enjoy the honey, even though the honey came out on Shabbos. He's not on board to make a gzera that maybe he'll do the schita b'yodayim, because he holds that even in the worst case scenario, if he will do a schita on Shabbos, that's not an Issur Torah. He would not be violating a d'oraisa. Why? Because dvash that's going to in the future come out is going to come out mi'atzmo. After he does the risuk on Erev Shabbos, the dvash is going to exude in a natural process. So we see clearly from the words and the opinion of Rabbi Elazar that anything that in the future is going to go out by itself, that's not a violation of an Issur Schita min HaTorah. And this will reflect in the Shita Beit Shammai and our Mishnah, and therefore the Matir to put the Korah, this heavy board on top of the Zeisim Vanovan Erev Shabbos, such that the mashke will, the liquid, the oil, and the wine will come out Yozuv May Elov on Shabbos, because even if he were to do the schita on Shabbos itself be a dayan, he would still not be chay v'chatos, and that's what we saw in Rabbi Lazar in the Mishnah with regard to Chalos Dvash, that since the risuk process took place before Shabbos, even if the schita would have happened on Shabbos itself, that would not be an Issur Torah. And the reason for that in the case of Dvash, as we saw, is because Shehem Asid Lotzeis Me'atzmo Me'achar V'Riskam. In other words, once you set up the process of risuk, then the ziva of the exuding of this dvash is going to happen automatically. So let's just formulate the shita of Rabbi Lazar in the following way: Kol davar sha'asid latzeis me'elav, ein bo isur Torah b'schita b'yadayim b'shabbos. And the impact on that is going to be merusakim, because that sets up the dvash as something that would be zav me'elav. And that's not a full schita when you have some liquid that's inside a solid substance and it's ultimately going to come out by itself. So even if it's not that way in nature, but since he actively did the risuk before Shabbos, then that case would be similar to a case where even if he didn't do the risuk, but if it's a ziva that's going to happen, me'elov, that's not called schita. Which means that the liquid is not really totally embedded in the solid that hosts that liquid. Now, Rabbi Shmuel we saw was matir schita biyadayim in the case of shum, boser, and melilos shenisrasku heitev. And the question is, what happens in a case where the risuk was not called sarka, wasn't a complete risuk? Nevertheless, it would not be, says Tosfos, a violation according to Rabbi Shmuel of an issur schita min haTorah, even though again the risuk was only a partial risuk. Because if you don't accept that principle, then Rabbi Shmuel should have asked this case of Risuk on Erev Shabbos, Gzeira, because maybe he won't do the proper Risuk. He won't crush it enough to that satisfy that that minimum requirement. But it must be that even in the case of olives and grapes, our Mishnah is talking about a case where there would the assumption of our Mishnah, the premise that underlies our Mishnah, is that there would not be an Issur Torah of Shechita on Shabbos, even if the Risuk was an incomplete Risuk, and that's why Beit Shammai amatid to put the Korah Mibojom. Now let's just mention, as we touched on it earlier, that Rabbi Akiva holds that if it wasn't this Asek Heitev Mibojom, and that's our case in our Mishnah, then the Shechita would be an Issur Torah, and therefore he would accept this Gzera that we would not allow you Shalo Lischot Biyadayim Af Nisrasku Heitev, because we're always afraid that maybe tomorrow he won't do the Risuk Heitev. Now keep in mind, Rabbi Elazar ben Pidos is an Amora, and he interprets that our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, who's a Tana. That's the Stam Rabbi Elazar that's mentioned in all the Mishnais and the Brises. Now, again, after our summary here of the Shita of Rabbi Elazar, that anything that's osid lozov mi'atzmo, lotzeis mi'atzmo, is embo isus chitim in ator b'shabis, and that is reflected in the Shita of Beit Shammai. The Gemara says that not every one of the Amoraim would accept this ha'amoda, this interpretation, or this attributing our Mishnah to that particular Shita. For example, the Gemara clarifies that Rav Yossi bar Chanina, he interprets that our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Shmuel. And the Gemara wants to know, my time alo Omar Kir Rabbi Elazar, why couldn't he accept the interpretation of Rabbi Elazar ben Pidos, that our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua? Omar Lecha, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina will tell you, there's no need or no proof to assume that Rabbi Elazar would actually reflect the Shita of our Mishnah, because it's very possible that Hossam, in the case of Chalos Dvash, that's the specific case where Rabbi Elazar was Matir the Dvash that went out on Shabbos. Mishum, the reason for that is the Mikara Ochel Uvasof Ochel. In other words, when the Dvash was still inside these chalos, these honeycombs, it was considered an Ochel. It didn't have the status of a Mashke. And therefore, even though now he's taking it out, and you might say that it became a mashke, no, it's exactly identical to the ochel that it was inside. And therefore, Blaza holds that even if you did a schita biyadayim on Shabbos itself, it would not be an Issur Torah. There's no Issur schita to take an ochel out of ochel. The Issur schita is to remove a mashke that's inside an ochel. So therefore, there's no room here for gzera in a case where it's yotze me'elav aval hocha. But here in our Mishnah, we're talking about zeisim v'anovim meikara ochel v'hashna mashke, that the shemen inside the olives or the wine inside the grapes, which are knusim, they're completely embedded, so to speak. They're part of the zeisim v'anovim. There's no separate mashke over here. Everything is considered and defined as an ochel. And now when he squeezes them out, you're talking about creating a mashke. When you create a mashke from an ochel, that's called schita. And Rabbi Elazar would hold that even if there was a risuk Erev Shabbos, there still would be an Issur Torah and schita v'yadayim v'Shabbos. If you go ahead and squeeze them, even though he started the process of removing these liquids before Shabbos, if he did that on Shabbos, he would be in violation of a meleches schita d'oraisa. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar would insist on the gzera here, even in a case where the mashkim are yotzim me'aleihem. So that now we're reinterpreting, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, the shita of Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah at the end of Masechet Shabbos. He's not saying that any mashka that's osid lotzeis me'elov, there's no schita. He's talking about a case of something that was an ochel mi'ikara, and now it's also an ochel. He did not create a mashka from an ochel. Now, we want to see what Rav Elazar ben Pedas would respond to this logical argument, which is in effect the kasha that undermines the kasha of Rav Yosef Rav Hanina, that undermines Rav Elazar ben Pedas. How is he going to answer this claim, counterclaim against Rav Yosef Rav Hanina, that from Rav Elazar ben Shemua in our Mishnah, in the Mishnah at the end of Shabbos, as far as Chalos Dvash, L'chora Rav Yosef Rav Hanina is correct, there's no proof that he would hold like our Mishnah in Zeisim Vanovim. Hashamina Lei L'Rav Elazar Da'afilu Zeisim Vanovim Nami Shari. We have a tradition in a Braisa that Rav Elazar was Ben Shavua was Matir even in the case of Zeisim Vanovim. And that's because it's Mashki Mayotze Me'aleim B'Shabbos Me'atzma. Daki Osa, when Rav Hoshaya came from Narda Osa V'Asei Ma'isnisim V'Yodei, he came with a Braisa in his hands. He had a tradition of a Braisa. And in the Braisa it says the following, Zeisim V'Novim Sheriskam Me'erev Shabbos V'Yotzu May Atzmon Asurim, that's the Tanakhama, Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon Matirim. So we're talking now about olives and grapes, which he began the process of crushing them on Erev Shabbos. And Yotzu, on Shabbos itself, the Mashkim came out, May Atzmon. The Tanakhama says that on that Shabbos it's Asur. We're always afraid that perhaps tomorrow he's going to, not tomorrow, but next Shabbos, he's going to do the Schlita B'Yadayim on Shabbos. And that's the Shita of the Tanakam. The Elazar of Shimon on Matir, they allow the Mashkin Ayotzim and B'Shabbos. So we see clearly from this Braisa that Rav Elazar ben Shemua holds that it's Mutter, even in the case of Zeisim Hanovim, if they were Nisrasku B'Erev Shabbos, you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of the Mashkin, that's Yosef and B'Shabbos, B'Elov. And we're not choshesh that he's going to come to do Schi to be a daim on Shabbos. And therefore, our Mishnah of Rabbi Shammai would reflect the Shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, the Amora Rabbi Elazar. Now the Gemara wants to know, why didn't Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina interpret our Mishnah and attribute that Mishnah to Rav Elazar in the Braisa? Rav Yosef Rav Hanina Braisa Lo Shmil. He never heard this Braisa. It wasn't part of his tradition that Rav Elazar would be Matir explicitly in the case of Zeisim Va'anov. The Gemara now clarifies, why is it that Rav Elazar doesn't interpret that Mishnah like Rav Yishmael? Rav Elazar ben Pedas, my time alo Omar, ki Rav Yosef Bar Hanina. Why wouldn't he interpret that Mishnah is like the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael? After all, Rabbi Yishmael was Matir to Inas Korah Me'erev Shabbos in the case of Shum Bosar Malilo Shariskam, and that would seem to reflect the fact that you're allowed to start this Malach on Erev Shabbos. Amar Lecha Ritva points out that the Gemara's Kasha is not that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas should have interpreted our Mishnah like Dafka, like Rabbi Shmuel, against Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, but he could have also added Rabbi Shmuel to the list. He didn't have to limit himself to Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. And furthermore, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, he didn't mention that the Braisa is talking Dafka according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua in Zeisim Vanovim, just that the Mishnah that of Chalas Dvash could be interpreted in that way. So the Gemara wants to know, wouldn't it make sense, instead of jumping from Chalas Dvash to Zeisim Vanovim, to talk about Rabbi Shmuel himself, who is Matir in the case of Teinas Korah on Erev Shabbos, in things that are very, very similar to Zeisim Vanovim, like unripened Zeisim Vanovim? Let's not forget that Bosar, which is in the Mishnah of Rabbi Shmuel, is Anovim Shelo Gidlu Kol Tzarkam. So that's a little bit closer to our Mishnah of Teinas Korah.
So Gemara says, Amar Lachara, Blazav and Pedas would say the following, Lav Itmar Ma, didn't we have in the Beis Medrash regarding this machlok between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, Amar Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, v'mechusarim dicha, lo pligi. In the case where there was no dicha, we're talking about shum, boser, and malilos, these different types of unripened fruits, grapes, grains, and so forth. If there was no dicha, in other words, if they started the process of risuk, ma'at, but only at the beginning, they haven't gotten to the point of dicha, which is called ksisa hetev. It's kuyamalo pligi. According to Rava's interpretation, none of the Tanoim would disagree. Even Rabbi Shmuel would be moda that this is also, you're not allowed to put the te'ina, to put the korah on Erev Shabbos, so the malacha will be completed on Shabbos, because this te'ina is going to achieve the ikar malacha schita, which we said on Erev Shabbos is also, because then the malacha of Shabbos relates to him on Shabbos. Keep pligi. According to Rava's interpretation, the machlokas tanoim is only in the case of b'mechusarim shchika. In other words, there already was dicha, and that was a serious crushing process of bosar melilos and so forth, shum. And all we need now is just shchika mu'etes, just the last little shlav over here of shchika in order to complete the melacha. And that's where we have a machlokas. Now, this statement of Rava is in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And the Rishonim ask, how does Rabbi Yochanan know that Rabbi Shmuel was only matir when it's eino mechusa dicha? Meaning that the risuk was called sarko. It would seem that on the base of what we saw in Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon, who are matir, even in Mechusa Dicha, then it's possible that even Rabbi Shmuel would agree to them. And the Tosa Rosh answers that Rabbi Yochanan was medayik this, that there's no machlok between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva in Zaysim Vanovim. The whole issue is only Boser, Malilos, and Shum. What's the difference between the two? It must be that in the case of Zaysim Vanovim, Rabbi Shmuel's moda to Rabbi Akiva, that there is an Isur, even if it's Eino Mechusarim Dicha. And that's a gzera because of these cases of Mechusarim Dicha. And he holds that there's an Isur Torah B'Schita. And this gzera is Shayach Dafka B'Zeisa V'Novim because Derech L'Sochton, but not B'Shum U'Bosa Melila, She'en Regilin Kolkach L'Sochton. So therefore, Hani Nami, getting back to Zeisim V'Novim, the Gemara says, Kimuchusarim Dicha Damu. There wasn't a real serious Dicha. Now, Beit Shammai in our Mishnah was matir even in such a case of Te'inas Korah B'Erev Shabbos. But we cannot interpret that Mishnah as reflecting the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. Because as we said before, Rabbi Shmuel is talking about a case where it's only Mechusa Shechika, but it's not Mechusa Dicha. So we have no choice but to interpret that Mishnah like Rabbi Loza ben Shamua. Now the Gemara brings the final Psak Halach and the Machlok Shin Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Torah Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Naz Halach Lamaisa, Ki Rabbi Shmuel, who is matir to Inas Korah B'Erev Shabbos on Bosar, Melilos, and Shum. And the Balamor writes that La Halacha we paskin like this Shita of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, because he said it was Halach Lamaisa, and we have a klal that we always paskin like a Maisa Rav. And furthermore, he says, the Gemara brings immediately, after this Horah, a list of halachos psukos. And it's implying, the impression you get is that even this halacha is called the halacha psuka. So therefore, we're going to reject the halacha Rabbi Yochanan, who says the machlok shim Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva in shum boser melilo shenisrakhu heitev. Right, it's only mechusa shchika, as we said before, because Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina doesn't hold like that. He interprets machlokas even in a case of lo nisrasku called sarkom. And that's why he said that our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. So it's really interesting that Lahaloch Lamaisa, we're going to Paskin according to the Balamor, like this Shita of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina against Rabbi Yochanan, and that means the Machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel revolves around a case where even though he only started the beginning of the process of Dricha, he didn't get to a serious level of Dricha, nevertheless there would be no Iser Malacha of Schita if he would do this B'yodayim on Shabbos, and therefore there's no Iser Te'ina on Erev Shabbos. Now the Gemara brings a number of different machlokas in between Rav and Shmuel with regard to Muktza. Now, why is the Gemara talking about Muktza? Tamadover, Shemiviya Gemara in Yonam Elukam. What's the reason this whole sugya of Muktza, which we're about to embark upon, is quoted here? And the answer is because of the original machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in the case of Shemen v'Beis Abad, which was addressed earlier in the sugya. In the case of Shemen Hazav Mitachas Hakora v'Beis Abad. And that's going to be relevant to this Machlokas Rav and Shmuel regarding Muktza. Shemen Shel Badodim. Badodim is a word that indicates the Baal, the owner of the Beis Habad. And the Beis Habad is where they took the olives to crush them and remove the oil. And now what happens is this Shemen that's left over in the different corners, so to speak, of the Beis Habad, underneath these great big koros, you know, these beams that are used to crush the olives. And we give them, those who, let's say, rent out the Beis Habad, will allow that Shemen, the leftover Shemen, so to speak, the Shirayim, to be given over to the Baal Beis Habad. In other words, it's kind of like either part of the salary itself, the paying the rental fees, or maybe it's just a tip. Umachtzolos shel badodin. Okay, this is what's called in Hebrew machtzelos, that's owned by the Baal Beis Habad. And this machtzelah is kind of like a mat, M-A-T, which is used to cover over the zesim. So we're going to have a machlokas as to the status of these on Shabbos with regard to these muktza, Rav Osar Ushmul Shari. Now let's try to understand what exactly is the machlokas here as far as muktza is concerned. But first we'll read a little bit further in the Gemara, so we'll see the broader picture here. He says, Hani karche dezuze. Once again, we talk about these mats, these machtzalot, that are used to cover up the schora, let's say in a boat, and so forth and so on. And it's called asuyos bezugos, or bezuze, I should say. Zuze, not zugos, but zuzos. We're talking about zuze, which is a Russian zugos. So zuzi and zugos are the same, and the gimel comes to replace the zion, and zuzi becomes zugi. But in any event, we're talking about machtzolos, these mats that are made in double layers, like Shtayim Asuyas Ka'ohel. Now, what's going on over here? We have Karche Dezuze, we have Machtzol Shel Badodim, and we have Shemen Shel Badodim, and we have a consistent Machlokes regarding Muktzah Rav is Oser and Shmuel is Matir. And we're going to try to clarify these svaras and what they're arguing about as we go along. Again, the Shemen Shel Badodim, we said, was Shemen that was, let's say, squeezed out on a weekday, and it was left in the various corners of the Beis Chabad under the Korah, and that's where it was on Shabbos. Now, we ask the question, what is the relationship here between the Dinim Mukta and our sugya that we were learning beforehand? And why would this Shemen be Mukta since it came out during the days of Chol? Satosis offers the following answer. He says, the reason why this Shemen might be Mukta is because this is designated for schar of the Badodim, to pay the Badodim. The Badodim, we said, were those owners of the Beis Abad. And this becomes like a sugya in Mukta, which is called Tmorim Ha'omdim L'schora. You know, you package fruits in order to send them out to the market, so it's not designated for eating purposes, but rather for market. And that's what we're going to see as we go through this sugya. Now, Tosus, in the case of Shemen Shel Badodim, offers another interpretation. He says that we're talking about Kishetan es Koras Beis Chabad al Azeisim Erev Shabbos. He placed these heavy koros over the grape, over the olives on Erev Shabbos. The Shemen itself is Zav Vaholikol Shabbos. It comes out of the olives during the course of Shabbos. Rav holds that that's Mukta, it's like Nolad, because the Zaysim were not, let's say, edible at the beginning of Shabbos, but as a result of the Korah and the Shemen coming out of the Korah, it became edible, but not the, you know, he wants to use the Shemen. The Shemen was the Dovah Shalom Baliola, and the Shemen is Mukta. And then we'll see what we can get about what we could get out of this case of Karche de Zuze. Now, the Gemara brings an additional machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in regard to Mukta. Omer Rav Nachman, Eiz lechalova. So you have a goat that is designated to give milk, and we take the milk out of the udders of the goat. It's not designated for slaughter to eat it. Verochel legizasa. And now you have a sheep that is designated to cut off shear the wool. And tarnagoles lebeitzasa, you have a rooster, a hen that's designated for giving eggs. Vitore deridia, and now we're talking about tore is shvare or shvarim. These are bulls that are omed lecharisha. Leridia means ridia is charisha for plowing, like in the sugi bava kama. You know, when you have different kinds of shvarim. Vitame de iska, and that's what we mentioned earlier. You have dates that are packaged for market. Rav, in all these cases, asaru Shmuel amar mutar. Rav says you're not allowed to use this on Shabbos or on Yontif because of Mukta. Now, in the case of an Eiz, you and I might say, well, why can't he shecht it on Yontif? Shechit on Yontif is Mutta. Or in the case of Rachel or Tarnagol or Shvarim, all these cases. And the answer is because this was Mukta, these animals were Mukta for a specific Malacha, for a specific purpose, whether it's for chaliva in the case of an Eiz, or gziza in the case of the Rachel, or beitzos in the case of Tarnagoles, or charisha in the case of the Shvarim, and tamid de iska for market purposes. So none of the above were designated for eating, for slaughtering and eating, on Yontif, let's say, for example. So since it's not designated for ochel, therefore, Rav says it's lacking hachana. You didn't prepare it. Your mindset was not to prepare it on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif for eating. And therefore, it's muktzah l'malacha. It was set aside for schora, for malacha. And Shmuel is mati. Shmuel says, well, we still have the potential in all these cases of using it for ochel. And even though, you know, his mindset was to designate it, for example, for market in the case of Tamid de Iske, or all these other malachas and so forth, but now he decided he wants the shechted. So there's always, in his mindset, going into Shabbos Yotu, the possibility that he might want a shechted. V'kamiflegi beplugta de Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. This is really the fundamental machlokes of mukta. And this is a an issue with regard to something that is designated for a certain use, and that would make it mukta, and that's going to be the Shita Rabbi Yehuda, which Rav accepts. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says that even though you designated for a specific use, but it's roi, it still is omed l'shimush on Shabbos. It could be used for something else, in this case for food, and therefore it's not makta midaito. So that Rabbi Shimon holds that everything is considered muchan me'elov, unless you're makta midaito, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you require a hachon in a positive sense. And in these cases, Rabbi Yehuda says you're lacking a hachon, and that's Rav Shita here. Shmuel Shita, on the other hand, like Rabbi Shimon, is that anything that's roi, it could be theoretically suitable and fit for use on Shabbos, that's not mukta, unless you are makta midaito, like we're going to have a case of Grogus Vitzimukim later on, where he puts it up on the roof. That's already called haktsa midaito, or haktsa biyadayim. Now, getting back to Kroche de Zuze, we're trying to figure out these machtsolos that are designated for covering schora and esfina. So Rav says he can't use them for any other purpose on Shabbos. It becomes mukta. It's designated for malacha. Shmuel says shari. Apparently Shmuel holds that there is a potential to use these karchi dezuze for other purposes. What could be the purpose for which you'd want to use these karchi dezuze? They could be used as protective coverings for fish, for any kinds of objects, even though they were designated for the purpose of schora. Now there is a shita here of Rashi that the machtsolos are omdos l'kisi schora b'sfina, that's called muktzal malacha. And there's another shita here, the Ritva apparently, that we're talking about muktzah machmas chisar and kis. And some want to say that that's what Rashi has in mind here, that these machtsolos are expensive and they're sensitive. But the truth is that makes no sense, because the Gemara says that the machlokas Rav and Shmuel is identical with the machlokas from Yud and Rav Shimon. And we know that even Rav Shimon, who's mekel and muktzah, he's machmir and muktzah machmas chisar and kis. So it would make more sense to say that these machtsolos could be mukta only in the sense that they're designated for malacha, for schora, but he wants to use them as a covering for something else. Something that could get dirty or dirties other things, so he wants to put the machtsolos on it. And that would be totally the machlokes, Rav Shimon and Rav Yehud, that's machlokes Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara brings a maisa here as far as psak halacha, hu talmida. There was a talmid, di ore becharsa di argiz ki Rabbi Shimon and shamti Rav Hemnuna. So this talmid paskin halacha in a city called Charasa di argiz, like Rabbi Shimon in mukta, and Rav Hemnuna put a whammy on him, a nidui on him. So the Gemara asks for Hak Rabbi Shimon svirale. We accept Sviralon, excuse me, we accept la halacha, the shita of Rabbi Shimon that rejects mukta in, and again in most cases except for a case where he's makta midaito. So that Talmud had a very good horah. So why did Rabbi Hemnuna put a nidui on him? And the Gemara answers, be asrei de Rav hava. This horah took place in the locale of Rav, and Rav accepted the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, and lo iboy leilam evid hach, he shouldn't have done that. It's very nice that you want to be mora hora like Rabbi Shimon elsewhere, but not in the city of Rav. That's a zilzil in the covet of Rav, and any zilzil in covet of Rav generates a chiyuv nidui, and you put him into nidui. Now, how do we know that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? That's going to be a sugya later on Daf Kuf Nun Zayin Mamish at the end of Masechta Shabbos. Mukta is a sugya that's spread out throughout Shabbos. Now, the Gemara is going to quote a story about two Talmidim that had a machlokas as far as Hotzos Mamin v'Shabbos, Mibayish and Noflebo Dleika. Hanitre Talmidim, there was a story of two Talmidim, and we're talking about a heter to take mazon or mashkim out of a house that's alighted on fire and take it into a chotzer. Is chad one talmid hoya matzil bechad mono, vechad matzil bearbo vechamisha mone, vechamifli beplugta de rabba barzavta vravhuna. Now the machlokas between Rava barzavta and Ravhuna is much later on in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Kuf Chaf. And what exactly is the Machlokas about? We have certain heterim that apply for food and drink in a case of taking food and drink out of a bayis and naflaba dleika and taking it from the bayis into a chatzer. She'irva imo. So we need a little bit of an introduction of some background here for a chatzir she'irva imo, and then we'll talk about whether or not we could be matir mazon to take it out from a bais into a chatzir she'irva imo. Now the Gemara on Daf Kuf Chaf that we mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, you're allowed to save from a dleika, from a fire, a sal mole kikros, a basket full of loaves of bread, even though it has a mazon in it of mea seudos. There's enough to serve it on at 100 different meals. So the Gemara asks from the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, that we're not allowed to save from a dleika more than the mazon of Sholosh Seudos, just three Seudos. So there are many different opinions in the Gemara in trying to reconcile this. Rav Huna, for example, says that the first Mishnah is talking about a case where there's a lot of work, a lot of Torah, lahatzil, become a kalim, to take all this food in different kalim is a whole hassle. And we're not going to be matir him to be motzi anything more than mazon Sholosh Seudos. But the second Mishnah is talking about a case where he's saving everything in one utensil, and therefore it's not a lot of tircha, and it's mutter therefore to be motzi from that kli, even if he's got mazon for mea seudos, because it's one single kli. That was the shita Rav Huna. Rav Abba Bar Zavda offers a different reconciliation of that apparent contradiction in the name of Rav, and he says that the two Mishnais are talking about even in a case where he's carrying it out with many kelim, so he's got mazon mea seudos, but in the first Mishnah we're talking about a case where he is bringing it into a chatzer acheres, and here we're going to be very stingy and very limited about the heter. The second Mishnah is talking about where he's being motzi li osa chotzer, not a chotzer acheres, but osa chotzer. And therefore, since he's taking it out to osa chotzer, they were more liberal, and they were matir him, even mazon mea seudos. So let's just emphasize again that if the hatzol is bekli echa, that's not called the tirchi yisera, and therefore they're more inclined to be matir, to be motzi in one kli, even if it's mazon mea seudos, it's not such a tircha. However, if you're being motzi in many different kelim, that's already considered a tircha. Now, it could be that according to the first Mishnah, we're not going to be matir more than mazon sholosh seudos, because he's being motzi l'chotzer acheres. Again, chotzer acheres means that I have my chotzer, you have your chotzer, we did an erev chotzeros, but it's going into a different chotzer. The second Mishnah, which is more liberal, that's in a case where he's being motzi li osachotzer, and therefore they're being matir him even mazon meyasudos. The Gemara has a suffix there on Daf Kuf Chaf of Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua with regard to a person who gathers together in many kalim inside his talis, and he was able to bring all these kalim out in one fell swoop. Should we consider that as one keli, or should we consider that as many kalim? And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that it's as if he carried one keli, even though physically he has many different kalim. Now, getting back to our machlokas between two talmidim, in a case where they were taking out mazon into a chatzar acheres, and there was a dleik on Shabbos, chad, and one of the talmidim matzil bechad mona, he was very makbid to combine all the ochlin and the mashkim into one kli, and then he took him out of the bayis into the chatzar. He would not permit taking many different kalim, because he held that many different kalim is the terchi yisera, which is prohibited on Shabbos. But chad, another talmid, matzil barbov hamishi money, he was more than willing to be matzil min adleika even in four or five kalim, but rather he was makbid to take all these kalim and put them in a larger kli, and he was carrying a larger kli with smaller kalim inside of them, which the first Talmud would not allow. The Komiflagi, and that's going to be the machlokas between Rabba Bar Zavda and Rav Huna. So it would seem that the first Talmud, who was makbid to allow only Hatzol of Ochel and Mashkin in one kli, he felt that in many kalim that would be a Tircha Yisera, that's Arsin Shabbos. That reflects the Shita Rav Huna, because Rav Huna was saying that the first Mishnah that was Machmir on Kuf Yud Zayin, that Mishnah was talking about a case of Kama Kalim, which is Osir B'Torah Kadol, and we're only going to be Matir in the second Mishnah in a case where he's Matzil and Kli Echad. So that's the first Talmud. The second Talmud, who allowed Hatzolah in four or five kalim, that reflects the shita of Rabba Bar Zavda or Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, who said that the two Mishnayis are talking about Kama kalim, where he's taking it out in many different kalim, and the first Mishnah was Machmir because he wants to take it out into a different chatzer, and they were not going to be matir more than Mazon Shalosh Sudos. The second Mishnah, which was more lenient, that's talking about a case of Osa Chotzer. And in Osa Chotzer, they allowed him to take even Mazon Meya Sudos, and even in many different Kalim. Because Rabbi Abba says that both Mishnayos over there talking about a case of Motzi Bekama Kalim. Now the only problem that complicates matters here is that Rashi says that that second Talmud in our Gemara, who was saving Ochlin Umashkin in many different Kalim, he put all those Kalim together into one Kli. That in fact was the Suffolk, the Bayahu in the Gemara over there, of Rav Huna Bered Rabbi Yeshua, when a person puts all these kalim under his talis and he takes them all out together, should we consider that as one kli or as many kalim? And the Gemara's conclusion seems to be that it's considered like one kli, and therefore Rashi holds that it, according to the second opinion here, he puts all these kalim into one kli. But the only problem is then that case, according to the Maskar of the Gemara, is not dependent on the machlokes between Rabba Bar Zavda and Rav Huna. Everybody would agree in that case that it's mutter and kama kalim because he puts them all under one talis, or according to Rashi here, he put them all into one kli. And that's why Tosis is bothered with Rashi's interpretation. And if you take a look at Tosis Dibra Maschel V'chad, he says, Pirish B'kunshus U'makaplom Kulam Bitokli echad v'nosam b'vasachas v'nirler v'nutam d'v'perikol kisve lo pligya muray b'ha d'boile u'pashit Everybody would agree that if he puts them all in one keli, that it's muta. It's if a Rebbeinu Tam interprets the chad matzil b'chad mona afilu meya su'udos aval arba b'chamesh mani kegon lahatzil v'lachzor lahatzil afilu also chotzer lo. So just to summarize Rebbeinu Tam's interpretation of that Gemara, one of the two Talmidim would save in one kli even 100 sudos, but in many kelim he wouldn't even allow to be matzil anything more than shalosh sudos. He would only allow in many kelim shalosh sudos, and that's even if he took it back into the same chotzer, because that's called the Tirchi Yisera. The second Talmud was motzi li oso chotzer, even many kelim, but only when he was motzi to another chotzer, he would not be motzi more than shalosh su'udos. And that, says Rebbein Tam, reflects the machlokas of the Amoraim later on in Daf Kuf Chaf. And this leads us to the Mishnah here on the bottom of Yutes Amid Aleph, which Yutes Amid Beis, Mitzshem, in tomorrow's Shia.